Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman Drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what. Step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it, one way or another, good or bad.
Being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hi, Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. I'm so happy you're here, so thanks for tuning in. Today's topic is compassion as a means for change, and hopefully by the end of this show, you'll be inspired to use your voice as a tool to change the mind of opponents, voice your opinions in a way that's meaningful and impactful, and use education to influence those around you. My guest today is LaDonna Harris, founder of some of today's leading national Indian organizations, including Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity, the National Indian Housing Council, Council of Energy Resource Tribes, National Tribal Environmental Council, and National Indian Business Association. LaDonna also worked to enact civil rights changes and was a founder of the National Women's Political Caucus. Today, I'm going to talk to LaDonna about finding her voice, discovering productive ways to work with adversaries, organizing groups for social change, and overcoming stereotypes. The free giveaway today is the Compassionate Leader Self-Assessment, and listeners can download it at wellwomanlife.com/014show. I love this giveaway because it's a quick way to learn about compassionate leadership and figure out where you are in your own leadership. But before I get started, I want to thank our sponsor today, Leafy Greens. They provide seasonal cleanses and nutrition consultations, and I love them. Leah is the owner, and she does a really awesome 21-day cleanse that literally changed my life a couple of years ago. You can visit wellwomanlife.com/leafygreens to sign up for the cleanse and get a special 10% discount. Now to my interview with LaDonna Harris. I'm sitting with LaDonna Harris this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
So LaDonna, let's start by giving me a short summary of your commitment to women's well-being. I know you have a long history of activism in lots of areas, particularly American Indian and women's rights. But what is your commitment to women's well-being? How would you describe that?
Well, you become so aware of it, particularly going to Washington, D.C. and being in D.C. for a while, where I saw women who had been in working for the government for years and they weren't being upgraded because they couldn't go off to conferences like men could. It was unladylike to travel by yourself and go to a conference. And I mean, it was such a silly rule that I thought it was keeping them from being going up the ladder of in their own departments. So I got involved in that, and with that we looked at it as a political issue, and we started with Gloria Steinem, all of those old greats in the Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, Betty Friedan. We looked at it as a political issue and said, let's start women's political policy. So that's what kind of the women's movement had already been involved, but they didn't focus on this issue. And I saw it as a form of discrimination. And this is when you become aware of discrimination, when you see it taking place in other ways, that you try to do something about it, and that's what motivated me.
And how did you bring in the rights of American Indian women, particularly?
It was harder to do. Women of color, it was very difficult because the women's movement tried to do that, and they, some way we just didn't. And I used to think, I felt that I was always a bridge for people of color because of all the work I've done and in the past. But it was difficult because the lifestyle, the culture and the lifestyle was different, and we didn't use the right approaches, so that they organized separately, but then we began to work together. And it was, so it was, became effective in that way. I think I learned all of that from my great-grandmother and my grandmother, my Comanche grandparents, grandmothers, because they came, you know, Comanche society and most Indian societies, women are not in second place, that they're equal to men and they have major roles to play. They control the community, the society. And my great-grandmother was the matriarch of all of this hordes of families and kept us all together. And so that I grew up knowing all my relatives, and cousins are not called, we don't have a word for cousins, that they were your brothers and sisters. So I belong to this immense family of people. And then when she passed away, my grandmother took that responsibility. And so that they were always people at our house, children my age and older. And so that I felt like I belonged to everybody. Everybody was related to me. And because of that, those strengths that they had of keeping folks together, the relationship of that was probably what motivated me the most.
Mm. What do you think were some of the biggest wins in your life? I know you've had a lot of wins, but particularly as they relate to women.
I think starting the Women's Political Caucus was probably the biggest focus, and that I contribute just particularly to women. But I've been so involved in integrating our hometown before that, and men and women work together on that, and Indians and Anglos and African Americans all working together. And then we organized Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity. So it was that sense of organizing, bringing people together who had some common interest or issues that were common, and putting them together and then letting them organize and taking over responsibility for making social change. And so we integrated Lawton while they just began to sit in the South, in drugstores and sit-ins. And so we saw that, and we organized. Fred was on the mayor's committee, and they were doing this political thing, and it never was. They weren't getting anywhere. But we started this social thing. We called ourselves a group, and we got people involved. And then we didn't set up this really hard structure. Everybody, whoever hosted it that night was the leader for that evening. And we discussed, and we got people involved in going to restaurants and to the owners of restaurants and talking to them. And they would all say, oh, I would integrate if somebody else did. So we got them together, and they integrated restaurants, and then we integrated. So there was one holdout. And we had Fort Sill next to Lawton, Oklahoma, and so we got the military to put it off base for soldiers, and she immediately opened up for everybody then. So,
okay, and you mentioned Fred. I just want to make sure listeners know we're talking about your husband at the time, who was in the U.S. Senate.
Yes, at that time he was in the state Senate.
Okay, and then he was in the U.S. Senate. Yes. Uh-huh. And when you just spoke of integration, what integration were you exactly talking about?
I was talking about African Americans. Mm-hmm. They weren't allowed to on the floor of theaters. They had to sit in the balconies. Just crazy things that didn't make even sense. We still had a railroad track that divided the communities, and they couldn't live on this side of the track. I mean, Indians weren't discriminated in the same way. It was I came up with the idea that discrimination against African Americans were overt, and it was, you know, they would say, people could say things and treat them in a different way. With Native Americans, it was covert. Mm. It was undermining who you were in this real, through the school systems and social systems. But we weren't overtly discriminated against, but it was through government policy and state policy and community, the way the community treated us. So, and Oklahoma has 39 tribes, and you know that Oklahoma was going to be an Indian state, and they were going to force all the tribes in the United States to Oklahoma. That was one of the government's great ideas, and that was the removal of the Trail of Tears, bringing those tribes from the East Coast to Oklahoma. And they were woodlands people, where we were plains people, nomadic people, Comanche, and we were nomadic people, so we're culturally so different than one another.
Yeah.
Well, that helped me in many ways, because to appreciate you learn to respect their belief systems, their method, their ceremonies and things. Just like here, we're so different than the Pueblo. My tribe, Comanches, is different than the Pueblo. But you can really appreciate and their culture and the way they look at there are similarities to the degree that the earth is our mother, and we know that we're related to all things. We have those things in common. But the way we carry out the ceremonies would be different, and our languages, of course, are different. So all of that diversity, and it was because of my grandfather. My grandmother was a Christian, and she wanted to go to church, so my grandfather would drive us to church. But he was Peyote Eagle Man and medicine, and he could cure us of certain kinds of diseases, but he wouldn't go in the church. He would sit in the car and wait for us to go through the church services, and then he would drive us home and then sing his peyote songs in the evening as the sun was going down. And as I said, could cure us of certain things. But some of the missionaries would come through and saying, you know, people like Papa would go to hell. And so it made me very upset, so you can imagine. That was my first real hard feeling of a form of that's what I was saying, that covert kind of discrimination. And so I asked my grandfather about it, and he said, you have to respect everybody's religion, and because what's good for your grandmother is good for her, so you have to respect it. And said, if you try to take it away, you will hurt them, but more important, you'll hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I was felt like sometimes organized religion was one of our great painful experiences, it made a difference, and also made me help me respect everyone's religion.
Mm. Yeah, and LaDonna, when you've worked for so long for the rights of others, and you were also raising a family and doing everything that women do, right? Was there a time in your life when you didn't put yourself first, or you weren't taking care of yourself the way you know now you probably need to?
Yes, of course. I grew up in the, I'm married out of high school, and worked to put Fred through college and law school. So that was what women wives did at that time. Even veterans' wives, that was a whole village for veterans returning from the other Asian country we fought in.
Korea.
And they were coming back, and so we lived in that housing unit, and I took care of children for a while, and then I got a job at the university, the library, and then I worked for the university in little different capacities, put him through college. We had a wonderful relationship of sharing. He was the voice. He was very verbal. I was dyslexic, and it took me a long time to be able to articulate anything. Put two sentences together was very hard for me, and so he was so good at speaking. I just depended on him to talk for me, really. And then, but he respected my ability to read people. Part of growing up being an Indian, I was literally that stereotype of a stoic Indian girl who didn't speak, because I wanted to test people by their actions before I could feel like I trust them to be friends. Mm. And so all of that, I think a lot of people of color use that as a personal protective mechanism. And so overcoming that was difficult, but he depended on me to interpret or to read people and say, and to observe. I was going to Oklahoma City about every other week and he had a room between, a setting room between he and this, the president pro tem of the Senate, state Senate. So everybody came, would come to see the president pro tem. And so I was always included, and I was the only wife that would come to Oklahoma City, and I acted as hostess and would observe people's behavior. And then after they'd leave, Fred would say, well, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that they didn't like, this one didn't like that, or didn't like that person.
You read all the dynamics.
Yes. So it became, I kind of acted as hostess, and then we were known, Fred was the youngest state senator, and the senator from Eastern Oklahoma said, well, let's invite Freddie and the Indian to dinner with us. So we would go out with the older senators, my affection, the affectionate term for me was the Indian.
Fred and the Indian, wow.
Yeah, but he meant it.
Yeah.
It was a good thing, way he could do it. It's the only way he could handle it from Eastern Oklahoma.
So thinking about all of that, was there a point where you were like, oh, hold on a second, I need to focus on me? I'm giving, and now I need to...
Well, it kind of started mostly because people didn't know anything about us, though Oklahoma had the largest Indian population in the country. And so the University of Oklahoma started the Southwest Center for Human Relations Studies. And I went there, and here was our intellectual community, and they didn't know one thing about us. And I got so frustrated that I couldn't articulate what the issues were. I was the only woman on the board, too, and couldn't articulate it. And then if they'd say something, I would cry. And so I got my way, too, by it. I found out, I recognized later, because I'd get so upset. But they, and of course, changed them, and they were the ones who helped us to start Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity at my house in Lawton. So we started out of that. But it became frustrated that I couldn't articulate how I felt emotionally or describe what the issues were. And so I had to work on that, had to overcome that. And and then there were different things that happened to me in my life. And Comanche culture, women not only set the cultural norm for the community, and that if a man bragged too much about himself, or that he, you're not supposed to put yourself in front of everybody. Mm. We were a communal society, so yeah. If a man did that, you could present him with a war bonnet, and he would have to act out what was required of that person who wore that war bonnet, and he would never brag again, I'll tell you, after he had to do that. Oh. So that the women could control the men's behavior. And this interesting kind of way. And there wasn't, they didn't see it as a punishment, they just saw it as a way of behaving. So you know how to behave when you're in that that communal system. And it was a good, great learning ability for me.
So has it been hard for you to put yourself out there because of
that culture? And it still is a problem for, Americans for Indian Opportunity, is that how do we brag about ourselves because we have to sell ourselves. I said I feel like when I go to New York to try to fundraise, I feel like I'm going to write a book about being a streetwalker in New York, because you feel like you're almost prostituting yourself sometimes when you're talking, because they are not understanding you and you're trying to figure out. It's almost like it is very difficult, because to brag on yourself and to brag on what you're doing is culturally inappropriate. Mm. So to try to do it in a way that they can understand, and we don't, we're the same way in the way you write it, you don't do it. And then people take our ideas, which are great, and make it their own. And we always see that that's probably the best flattery that we can do, or embracing what we've been doing in the past. So we take that as our satisfaction, but it makes it harder to do fundraising because that cultural value, a cultural aspect of it is different.
Do some of the younger folks, like I know your daughter works with you, and other younger people come in with more contemporary or modern ways of being able to handle that fundraising role?
Not so much the fundraising, but we do in our ambassadors. We have this ambassadors program where we take young people from 25 to 35 who are doing work in their own communities and bring them, and we always make sure that half of them are male and female balance, and reservation and urban, make sure regional to try to give a balance to the people. But we do help to overcome the discomfort of forms of discrimination that we've suffered in the past. Now your question was, I'm trying to get to it. The point in your question.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think we covered it. I actually was going to ask you again just a little bit more about you, become your personal journey to becoming a well woman, because on the Well Woman Show we talk about women's journeys achieving fulfillment and well-being for themselves, right? Because we're always looking after other people, working so much in our community.
I think successes of the program, Americans for Indian Opportunity, it gave me that confidence. And then I still cry occasionally, but I'm a little more articulate about issues and how to help people to see. We did the film Indian 101 so that people could understand that they don't know what they don't know about us, and try to overcome that. And so this new generation of people that are coming and going through our program, we talk about those things, and that we can, because what we have had to do in the past, our form of discrimination, we have to carry our history. We're not in history books. You know, we have Pocahontas and Sacagawea, and that's probably only two women they ever heard of. And so we carry our history with us, which becomes a burden, and some of it's too negative, that you don't get rid of the negative part. So we help people get through that negative part and be proactive. How do you be proactive? And how do you bring your culture? You know, they used to say we live in two worlds, in the Indian does, and the Indian world and the Anglo world. And I said, we live in one world. We don't live in... will become schizophrenic if you live in two worlds. So I say we live in one world, and we don't have to leave our culture on the res. We take it with us and help to incorporate our culture and make it contemporary and use it every day. So it's not a separate, it's not separate than, and that's why contemporary, like you were asking about Laura and Catherine, they keep their culture and work it into contemporary situation, whether it's political activity or social activity or educational, as Catherine has done much in education. And so that's what we encourage through the Ambassadors Program, and now we're international. So we're going to have this international influence about, and it's so easy because we've had exactly the same things, but they were so close. They behave that our treatment from Europeans have all been the same, close enough that we can bond. It bonds us rapidly, and so that what we then we can talk about solutions, how to overcome these things, and the fact that we have to spend so much time educating the public is probably our hardest job, right?
That is, yeah, I can see that. And so that's why you did that film. LaDonna, I want to ask you, what do you think has contributed to your ability to be a leader and be so successful?
Well, I think first that I felt like I was related to all the Comanches, that they were related to me.
So the family.
Yeah, so it's a family relationship. We have a philosophy of the four R's: relationship, responsibilities, reciprocal, and redistribution the four R's is a philosophy of our program. And so that relationships is everything. We all have that as an issue. It's a human element.
And it sounds like that was your that's always been your strength, reading people in the room and developing those relationships. I want to ask you, we're moving into the segment called Superpowers for Success, and part of what we do with this show is share some of the tips and tricks of super powerful, successful women, and share those with listeners and other people, so that we can, you know, share those tips and insights into, you know, how you do what you do and who you are. So I want to ask you a few quick questions.
Okay.
The first one is, what does success in life mean to you?
Creating something and letting it go. The people who come together around an issue and start resolving it and getting them organized and then letting it go and then being able to move on. That has been the life of Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity, Americans for Indian Opportunity. We bring people together and talk about around an issue like housing. We helped to start the National Indian Housing Authority, CERT, the Council of Energy Resource Tribes. So we bring people together who are smarter than we are about the issue, but we see the problem, but we don't have all the answers. So we bring them together, and then they organize, and then after a while, we help them get funding, and they can go and focus on that, and then we can move on.
I love that. So creating something and then letting it go.
That's hard to do.
It's really hard to do, and it's the sign of a great leader.
Well, thank you. We learned that if you didn't do that, if your presence keeps people from taking responsibility. And so that if you give the responsibility to them, then they can take it and go with it. And the outcome, after we did the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, we immediately saw that environment was a way of protecting our resources. So then we had to change the policy of EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and was able to do that. And recognizing that the tribes have the right to have their own environmental standards, which are usually better than the communities around them.
Okay, and LaDonna, describe one personal habit that contributes to your own well-being.
I think I'd have to say it's really kind of someone said, "You're just so wonderful." And I said, "Oh, I'm really selfish because I need it. I need that affection I get from working with other people." So it's really a selfish act. Mm. And if you see it that way, then you know it gives you a little better balance. And so I know that I was needy and worked toward that accomplishment, and that reaction I get from that is a great deal of affection.
Mm.
And, you know, in Indian way, you're like, I'm taking into the Tlingit tribe or Major Sister or our mother to some people. And now I'm Mama LaDonna to all the ambassadors here and in New Zealand. They've referred to me that way. So those kinds of things, it gives you another relationship and responsibility to that relationship.
Mm. And what superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time? What would you say your superpower is? I could actually guess a few, but I want you to tell me.
Well, I think being able to organize people. One of the things I guess that really, I think this was important to me, that my grandmother taught me. I came home crying because somebody called me a derogatory term, Indian term. And she said, honey, don't get mad at them, because if you get mad at them, they have defeated you. And said, just feel sorry for them, because they don't know you. They don't know about Indians, and they don't know about you. And so that's kind of put me in good stead. In Washington, when someone is opposing whatever our position is, we study them and say, well, what motivates them, instead of getting mad at them, which I'm not always true to that. I go into my crazy Comanche Indian woman act occasionally. but you don't want to see that either. But I try not to. I try to follow grandmother's advice and say, okay, what motivates him or them, it's usually him in Washington, to be against what we're proposing, and then figure out who influences his thinking, or who's his boss, or, you know, how do you build a fence? I mean, how do you get over the fence? Some fence, by the way, fences don't work because you can go over them or under them.
Right. So do you think that is a specifically women-centered way of looking at things? It's peace building rather than conflict. Or is it a Comanche thing, or maybe both?
Both, I think. It's Comanche woman's thing. I think that I would put it that's way Comanche women would deal with it. And men, to a certain degree, they deal with it in a little different kind of way because their responsibilities were different. But I would say that because being coming from a communal society, you need everybody. Everybody has value. That's what I was taught. Everybody has value. Don't overlook the fact that they have value and can give back to you. And so that's one of the basic philosophies that makes you look at them and try to understand, even if they're causing you all kinds of problems, that, you know, you have to figure out what motivates them and how you can influence them to think differently.
It sounds like your grandmother taught you a lot. Yes. It sounds like she taught you a lot about empathy.
Yes.
Understanding other people.
And not being... you're not supposed to be mean to everybody, because we say we're related to everyone and everything. You know, the Indian philosophy, indigenous philosophy, is, if we find that in Latin America and every place, indigenous people, that we are connected to everything, to all peoples, all living animals, or our cousins, our relatives, and that we knew that we had stardust in our DNA before the science, you know, said so. So we feel like we're related to the universe, therefore we have a responsibility to it. So that's, if we can follow that basic philosophy, we'd all be good environmentalists and think differently about things. So that's basically where my philosophy comes from.
And we're wrapping up here. I just want to ask you, what are you reading right now? What book are you reading? Like, what's on your nightstand?
Gloria Steinem's book, On the Road.
Cool. Have you finished it, or you're partway through?
Yes. And, of course, I'm very flattered she included me in it, so
yeah, that's
right. That's made me want to read it.
But I what did she say about me?
Yeah. So it was interesting, too, to her background. It was fascinating, you know, lived in a trailer house, and her father never had a job necessarily that could keep the family up. So she started from an interesting background.
Last question. What advice would you give your 25 or 30-year-old self?
Is really follow that Comanche philosophy that everybody has value and try to find that. You know, that they have value that can give either to you or to the group, and don't dismiss them. Don't, because they're in this place or they're against your position.
I think in order to do that, you have to be able to put yourself aside to really see someone else's value and see it from their perspective. How were you taught to do that? Or how do you do that?
I'm sure there's a process. Well, one thing I found out late in life, actually, is that I didn't realize that I was looking at things through my Comanche system, value system. I was making decisions, and if I couldn't understand them in a way they were articulated or shared with me, that I'd have to visualize it, because Comanche is not a written language. You have to visualize, and when people tell stories or tell you things, they talk in a way that you can see what they're talking about. You know, in your psyche, you can actually see it, and so that's important that, and then I didn't realize I was doing it, though, for a long time. And then I finally realized, because if I don't do that, a red flag kind of comes up, and there'll be something, a level of discomfort, physical discomfort that I get. So I have to stop and think about, why is it that I'm feeling this way? And so it kind of comes back to me and re-examine my own self. Why do I feel this negativity or this discomfort about this idea, that it sounds like a good idea and everybody seems to be for it, but why is it that, well, they may have left out the urban Indians, or you know, something comes out at you, and that's what has kind of salvaged me, I guess, through the time, and that pulls my culture back into place, and looking at it from that point of view.
Well, it's amazing to hear how you're continuing the Comanche traditions and the values and teaching those. And the sign of a true leader is really when you see someone teaching that and then it carries on, right, without you. So congratulations on that. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
That's it for our show today. I've been speaking with LaDonna Harris, founder of Americans for Indian Opportunity. I spoke to LaDonna about finding her voice, discovering productive ways to work with adversaries, organizing groups for social change, and overcoming stereotypes. You can get the Compassionate Leader Self-Assessment for free at wellwomanlife.com/014show. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women, leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city yet and you'd like to start one, email me at info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe in iTunes and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. You can also continue the conversation in the Well Woman Life community group at facebook.com/groups/Well Woman Life Community. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you were listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.